First, it's the week in Washington, where we take a look at several top stories in national politics, and it's less than a week until that final day of voting in the election. We're going to hear some closing arguments from the two presidential candidates out on the campaign trail and check out a couple other big stories along the way. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you been following any of the latest rallies and campaign events for Donald Trump and Joe Biden? Have you attended any of them in person or virtually? What do you think about the closing messages from the candidates, their final pushes to win over and motivate voters? What's been a difference maker for you? How do you feel at this point in the election season? Fatigued? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Tolu Olorunipa is the White House reporter for The Washington Post. Tolu, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
In just a minute, we're going to listen to part of the messages from President Trump and former Vice President Biden. But give us kind of the state of affairs right now. Where are the candidates focusing their time, energy, and money right now?
Yeah, it's really the tale of two very different campaigns. For President Trump, he is traveling, barnstorming the country, holding multiple rallies a day. He is going to all different swing states, including Wisconsin, multiple times, and trying to see if he can eke out a victory between now and Election Day. For Joe Biden, it's a much different picture. He is also traveling, going to multiple states, but not holding these big rallies, essentially feeling pretty confident in his position at this point, feeling like he's leading in the polls. He has a number of pathways to get to 270 votes. Today, he was in Delaware and he gave a speech about coronavirus pandemic. He did not travel out to any swing states. And I think it's a very clear contrast between what the two candidates are doing. President Trump feeling that he needs to sort of pull a rabbit out of his hat in order to win. So he's trying to feverishly run around the country and travel and hold multiple rallies, even though many of the places where he is going have increasing numbers of coronavirus cases, and a lot of the attendees at his rallies do not practice social distancing, do not wear masks. So he is trying to, you know, downplay the coronavirus. He's been saying that we're rounding the turn. It's not a big deal. It's not a problem. You know, vaccines are coming soon. While Joe Biden has really been honing in on, you know, criticizing the president for his response to the virus and doing so in a much more socially distanced way, in which he's not having big crowds and he's not traveling as much. So it's two very different campaigns, and they have different levels of confidence at this point in whether or not they are going to be able to win once the votes are tallied next week.
Now, stand by for a moment, Tolu. I want to give a listen to minute-ish samples of what the candidates have had to say. You mentioned the coronavirus. Here's some of what they've had to say in their closing messages, not directly related to COVID-19. First of all, President Trump speaking yesterday in West Salem here in Wisconsin.
This election is a choice between a Trump super recovery or a Biden depression. That's what you're going to have with a raise of taxes. The biggest tax increase in our history. It's ridiculous. It's a choice between a Trump boom or a Biden lockdown. Let's lock it all down. And by the way, speaking of lockdowns, let's get you, Governor, to open it up. Let's get him to open it up. It's a choice between our plan to cut your taxes or even, and I have to tell you, you know, we've given you the biggest tax cut in the history of our country. You know that. Biggest regulation cut in the history of our country. And Sleepy Joe Biden, his plan is to raise your taxes at a level that our country has never raised taxes before. Somehow that doesn't work too well. Do you agree?
Some exaggeration on the degree of tax cuts and hikes, but the general message there. Here's Biden speaking yesterday in Warm Springs, Georgia, referencing, he said, charlatans and con men who appear throughout our history.
They appear when the nation's been hit the hardest. We're at our most vulnerable. Never to solve anything, but only to benefit themselves. In a recent encyclical, Pope Francis warns us against this phony populism that appeals to, quote, the basest and most selfish instincts. He goes on to say, politics is something more noble than posturing, marketing, and media spin. These sow nothing but division, conflict, and oblique cynicism. He said, for those who seek to lead, We do well to ask ourselves, why am I doing this? Why? What is my real aim? Pope Francis asked questions that anyone who seeks to lead this great nation should be able to answer. And my answer is this. I run to unite this nation and to heal this nation. I've said that from the beginning. It's badly necessary.
So two contrasting tones there to Lou, just two samples of a lot of talking by both candidates. But does that kind of capture their approach to how they're talking in the run-up to the end of the election?
Yeah, definitely. That is what we have been hearing on the campaign trail. We're seeing these two different candidates offering different messages. President Trump has wanted to say, I am the candidate that's going to bring the economy back. It's not going to allow there to be any more shutdowns. It's going to put the coronavirus behind us by essentially ignoring it and not talking about it and not having people practice all the different mitigation practices, which have, you know, made the economy to shrink and caused a lot of people to lose their jobs as different states have tried to get control of the virus. While Biden has said that Trump has failed in his good test as president, he has failed to control the virus, he has failed to follow the science, he has not shown good leadership in this effort in trying to make sure that people are following the right practices of wearing masks and socially distancing and trying to keep themselves from getting infected. The former vice president has criticized Trump for himself getting infected and for there being outbreaks within the White House. So there are two very different messages on this issue of the pandemic, which for a lot of voters is the top issue that they're voting on. They want a candidate that's going to align with their views on how to respond to this pandemic, whether that means completely moving on and not allowing there to be any more mitigation, no more shutdowns, or maybe someone who wants a candidate who would be more willing to listen to the scientists and follow some of the mitigation practices that have been put in place in order to get control of the virus and in order to not have it, you know, surging to record levels as it is now in so many different parts of the country. So this is an issue that is dominating this race. It's leading to a lot of enthusiasm on both sides of the aisle. And it is something that I believe that both candidates are going to continue to talk about in the final 6 days of this race.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa from The Washington Post, looking at the top stories in national politics, including the home stretch in the election campaign. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Catherine is with us in Elkhart Lake. Catherine, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Catherine?
Well, I was watching Trump at his rally in Lansing, Michigan, and all he talked about for a long period of time was how fabulous his rallies were, biggest crowds ever. I'm working my ASS off. I mean, he's such a crude man anyway. His persona is so, but it's always all about him, not a word about what he would try to do continuing with the pandemic, constantly saying, we're going around a corner now. It's getting better. The numbers are great. We're going to open this country up. What has he done to us? First of all, withholding critical information in January from President Xi of China, telling him how bad this was, not stepping up immediately and telling his fellow Americans what was coming our way. And now he just says, all we talk about is COVID, 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 COVID. And the things that he says to members of the media, I've been a member of the media for 40 years, so is my husband, for a national network. What he has done and said about reporters and correspondents, calling us names and the enemy of the people and garbage and fake news. We have been held hostage to lies and insane behavior with this man. And all
Catherine, I'm going to jump in. You gave us a lot to work with. Thank you for calling in. First of all, she's not liking the president's persona, his attacks on the media, tapes she was referring to, I think, from Bob Woodward of the president talking about the seriousness of the disease. Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, more tapes of him talking about it earlier. But none of that seems to have bothered the president's supporters in 2016. Any reason to think it would be different this time around, Tolu?
Well, you did have a lot of people who voted for the president despite his commentary, despite his crudeness. They thought that they would like his policies and that he would sort of merge into the role and become more presidential and leave behind sort of his show business personality. And a lot of those voters have left the president. A lot of suburban voters have said, you know, I'm out. This is not what I signed up for. I did not want a president who was going to cause my blood pressure to rise every time he goes on TV, or, as a caller said, would always be speaking in such a crass and crude manner and not focusing on the major issues that face the country, instead sort of focusing on his own vanity and his big crowds and the fact that he can get a lot of people to show up in the middle of a pandemic. So he has lost some voters. He has not lost his core supporters, who are with him all the way. They're very enthusiastic. They like the fact that he is defiant. They like the fact that he goes against the grain. He goes against political norms. So for those core supporters, they continue to be with the president, and they are enthusiastic, and they may have even grown in number in terms of more people joining that force. But when it comes to some of those more moderate voters who backed the president in 2016, maybe because they didn't like Hillary Clinton, a lot of them are feeling okay voting for Joe Biden. They've been turned off by Trump, that they, you know, can't see themselves voting for him again. And that could be the margin in a lot of these states where it's expected to be very close, and the president's base alone will not be enough to get him to the number that he needs in order to win. So that is a very interesting dynamic to watch. And I think there's a lot of enthusiasm and passion in opposition to the president now that we didn't see in 2016. We always saw the enthusiasm of his base, but now we're seeing this sort of resistance movement, which has grown in size and with its passion, and that could really impact what we see. We are already seeing it in very large early vote numbers, but it could really impact what the final tally is once all the votes are counted.
We're talking to White House reporter from the Washington Post, Tolu Olorunipa, in our week in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you watching either candidate on events virtually or in person? What are you hearing from them? Do you like what you're hearing? What races are you watching around the country? We don't have a Senate race, a U.S. Senate race here in Wisconsin. Are you watching that campaign? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Tolu Olorunipa from the Washington Post, looking at the top stories in national politics, which means, yes, mainly election. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, hopes, fears in the run-up to the last day of voting. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Tolu, it's no secret, Wisconsin, a hot contest here. Both candidates pretty much need to win Wisconsin, mostly, if they want to win. You focused in on another state that's maybe more of an unexpected contest, Georgia. What's going on there?
Yeah, surprisingly, Georgia has become a major swing state in this election. Republicans have won the state in basically every election going back to the early 90s, and it's not a state that Democrats have had a lot of success in, especially recently. It's been seen as traditionally a Republican state, but part of some of those trends that I was talking about earlier with suburban voters and moderate voters fleeing from the Republican Party, fleeing President Trump, is really starting to have an impact on Georgia. We're seeing the suburbs of Atlanta really turn out at high levels. And what we saw in 2018 was a relatively close race for governor. And I think Democrats realized that they could have a competitive race in Georgia. And the polling has come back showing Biden slightly ahead, slightly in the lead, and with a real shot at winning the state's 16 electoral votes. That's not something that most people would have expected at the beginning of this race. But because the race has been so close, because President's numbers there are not great, Joe Biden decided to travel to Georgia and hold a couple of campaign events there with the hope that maybe he could pick off a state that has been won by Republicans consistently in the last few elections. So it shows how much this race has really been upended by not only the president's poor numbers, but the coronavirus pandemic and shifting demographics, and the idea that there may be a surge in turnout that could put a number of states in play in different ways than we expected. And we have already seen very high turnout levels in a number of different states, including Georgia, just in the early vote. And it's an indication that people are really passionate about this election. People are paying a lot of attention. And it's not just Democrats that are turning out at this point. Now we're seeing a lot of Republicans turn out in their early voting period. And there's the expectation that Republicans will turn out at a higher rate on election day than Democrats, who are more prone to using mail-in ballots or voting early. So this race could come down to the wire, and states like Georgia could end up being pivotal in whichever candidate ends up on a path to 270 votes.
Go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Kelly is with us in Green Bay. Kelly, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Kelly?
I wanted to talk about how I'm in my early 30s, and I've been having a lot of conversations with my parents who are undecided, I would say. They're definitely not interested in Trump, but they don't feel passionate about voting for Biden. And it's always surprising to me when talking to them about the two candidates that they always seem to get stuck on a little thing that comes out about Biden or an accusation that Trump makes about Biden, although it has no, meat to go off of. And I constantly remind them, you know, it's all of the things that have happened with Trump. He's been impeached, but it seems like they get kind of hung up on those one little thing about Biden because they're not so passionate about either one.
Interesting, Kelly. Thanks a lot for that call. A lot there we could go into, Tolu. Older voters, for one thing, the Trump campaign strategy to try to find that one little thing that'll deter people from voting for Joe Biden. I don't know. What does that make you think about?
Yeah, those are the two issues that I think came up from that call. And in part, Trump is not doing as well with older voters in the polls as he did in 2016. There's a sense that demographic group is shifting away from Trump, in part because of his handling of the coronavirus. A lot of older voters see Joe Biden as someone who would be better at handling the virus, and also don't agree with the president's approach to the presidency. He's been much different than the presidents they've seen over the years. He's been much more crude. And I think that has driven away a large number of older voters. But there are a lot of voters that are in the same position of not necessarily liking Trump, but not feeling passionate about Joe Biden, feeling like he has a number of different flaws, feeling like President Trump's statements about him, including the fact that he has been in Washington for 4 decades, is something that they think about. Do they want a career politician to go back into the White House after having Trump in the office for 4 years? Do they want to return to the kind of president that we may have had in the past? Or do they like the fact that President Trump has been a disruptor and that things are different in Washington than they were before? And there are a number of different allegations from the Trump campaign about Biden, whether it's allegations of corruption, allegations of, you know, things that he failed to do as vice president. And that does make it difficult for some voters to pull the lever for Biden. A lot of those allegations are unsubstantiated, as the caller said. They don't have a lot of meat to them. They are questionable on their face. But sometimes in politics, all you have to do is sort of have the cloud of scandal around someone. And that could really give a lot of voters pause as to whether or not they want to vote for that candidate. So that's what the Trump campaign has been trying to do. They've been pushing a lot of these allegations at Joe Biden. You've had President Trump on the debate stage calling Biden a corrupt politician, saying that he got rich while he was in office, and all of these different allegations, a lot of them that do not have evidence to back them up. But it has worked with a number of voters who are sort of worried about not liking either candidate and maybe feeling like maybe they should stay home or vote for a third party candidate or just leave the presidential ticket blank as they go to vote. So that's something that we'll be watching very closely as we look at who votes, who stays home, and whether or not these attacks from the Trump campaign end up working.
Thanks for the call, Kelly. We're talking to Tolu Olorunipo from The Washington Post, looking at some top stories in national politics. Well, it's the never-ending story, Tolu. Are we going to have another COVID-19 economic relief package from Congress and the White House? Right now, it looks like not. Negotiations have stalled in part because of that and coronavirus stock market drifting downward today. What is the latest on the talk of a potential relief package?
Well, they're not really happening. There's not much talking going on in Congress. The Senate adjourned and they went home, and they will likely not be back until after the election if they follow the plan that they have in place. And that means no pandemic stimulus deal before the election. They had been talking all the way going back to July. The White House, the Democrats, and some Republicans had been trying to hammer out a deal to get people relief. And it just didn't come together. President Trump was not able to bring together a deal. There was too much disagreement between the Democrats and the Republicans. a lot of Republican senators did not want to be on record spending, you know, maybe $2 trillion in taxpayer money on another relief package when they didn't know what the outcome of the election will be. So right now, we are seeing the ramifications of that with the stock market dropping significantly. We're seeing coronavirus cases spike, and a lot of the relief would have been sort of trying to crush the virus, trying to get more testing, more contact tracing, get people back into schools. And we're not going to see that, at least in the short term. There's a potential that it happened after the election, depending on what happens. But there's also the potential that, especially if Joe Biden wins, that this will not come into place until January or February, especially since the inauguration will not be until late January. So it could be several more months of people waiting for relief, and that is not the outcome that the markets were looking for. It's not the outcome that a lot of struggling families are looking for, and it's something that could impact this election with a number of people who were hoping for that relief, showing their views at the ballot box and maybe voting for or against certain candidates because, you know, the relief package did not come, or some people may be staying home because they felt like Washington once again did not work for them. So it is something that's having a major impact. And just as we head into the winter with a rising number of cases, there's no relief coming from Washington, and a lot of Americans are going to struggle on their own, at least for the next few weeks.
Talu, thanks again for joining us today.
Sure thing. Thank you.
Talu Olorunipa is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. He joined us for our Week in Washington, where we looked at the state of the presidential campaign with just under a week remaining until the last day of voting.